fire.
Nothing, I said, as Jurian swore ahead. We were both moving at his barked curse, and then broke into a run at the sound of a sword whining free of its sheath. Leaves and branches whipped at me, but then we were at the wall, that invisible, horrible marker humming and throbbing in my head. And staring right at us, through the hole, were three children of the Blessed. Chapter 7. Branna and Dagdan looked like they'd just found second breakfast waiting for them. Jurian had his sword out, the two young women and one young man gaping between him and the others, then at us, their eyes widening further as they noted Lucian's cruel beauty. They dropped to their knees.
"Masters and mistresses," they beseeched us, their silver jewelry glinting in the dappled sunlight through the leaves.
"You have found us on our journey."
The two royals smiled so broadly, I could see all of their two white teeth. Jurian, for once, seemed torn before he snapped, "What are you doing here?" The dark-haired girl at the front was lovely. Her honey-gold skin flushed as she lifted her head.
"We have come to dwell in the immortal lands. We have come as tribute."
Jurian cut cold, hard eyes to Lucian.
"Is this true?"
Lucian stared him down.
"We accept no tribute from the human lands, least of all children."
Never mind that the three of them appeared only a few years younger than myself.
"Why don't you come through?" Branna cooed. "And we can enjoy ourselves."
She was indeed sizing up the brown-haired young man and the other girl, her hair a ruddy brown, face sharp but interesting. From the way Dagdan was leering at the beautiful girl in front, I knew he'd silently made his claim already. I shoved in front of them and said to the three mortals, "Get out! Go back to your villages, back to your families. You cross this wall, and you will die." They balked, rising to their feet, faces taut with fear and awe.
"We have come to live in peace."
"There is no such thing here. There is only death for your kind."
Their eyes slid to the immortals behind me. The dark-haired girl blushed at Dagdan's intent stare, seeing the high fey beauty and none of the predator. So I struck. The wall was a screeching, terrible vice, crushing my magic, battering my head, but I speared my power through the gap and slammed into their minds. Too hard. The young man flinched a bit. So soft. Defenseless. Their minds yielded like butter melting on my tongue. I beheld pieces of their lives like shards on a broken mirror, flashing every which way. The dark-haired girl was rich, educated, headstrong, had wanted to escape an arranged marriage and believed Prithian was a better option. The ruddy-haired girl had known nothing but poverty and her father's fists, which had turned more violent after they'd ended her mother's life. The young man had sold himself on the streets of a large village until the children had come one day and offered him something better. I worked quickly, neatly. I was finished before three heartbeats had passed, before Branna had even drawn breath to say,
"There is no death here, only pleasure, if you are willing."
Even if they weren't willing, I wanted to add. But the three of them now blinked, balking, beholding us for what we were, deadly, merciless, the truth behind the spun stories.
"Perhaps I've made a mistake,"
their leader said, retreating a step.
"Or perhaps this was fate,"
Branna countered with a snake smile. They kept backing away, kept seeing the histories I'd planted into their minds, that we were here to hurt and kill them, that we had done so with all their friends, that we'd use and discard them. I showed them the Naga, the bogey, the Midgard worm. I showed them Claire and the golden-haired queen skewered on that lamppost.
The memories I gave them became stories they had ignored, but now understood with us before them.
"Come here," Dagdon ordered.
The words were kindling to their fear. The three of them turned, heavy pale robes twisting with them, and bolted for the trees. Branna tensed, as if she'd charged through the wall after them. But I gripped her arm and hissed, "If you pursue them, then you and I will have a problem." In emphasis, I dragged mental talons down her own shield. The princess snarled at me, but the humans were already gone. I prayed they'd listen to the other command I'd woven into their minds. To get on a boat, get as many friends as they could, and flee for the continent. To return here only when the war was over, and to warn as many humans as possible to get out before it was too late. The Highburn royals growled their displeasure, but I ignored it, as I took up a spot against a tree and settled in to wait, not trusting them to stay on this side of the border. The royals resumed their work, stalking up and down the wall. A moment later, a male body came up beside mine. Not Lucian, I realized with a jolt, but did not so much as flinch. Jurian's eyes were on the place where the humans had been.
"Thank you," he said, his voice rough.
"I don't know what you're talking about," I replied, well aware that Lucian carefully watched from the shade of a nearby oak. Jurian gave me a knowing smirk and sauntered after Dagdon. They took all day. Whatever it was they were inspecting, whatever they were hunting for, the royals didn't inform us. And after the confrontation that morning, I knew pushing them into revealing it wouldn't happen. I'd used up my allotted tolerance for the day. So we spent another night in the woods, which was precisely how I wound up sitting across the fire from Jurian after the twins had crawled into their tent and the sentries had taken up their watch positions. Lucian had gone to the stream to get more water, and I watched the flame dance among the logs, feeling it echo inside myself. Spearing my power through the wall had left me with a lingering, pounding headache all day, more than a bit dizzy. I had no doubt sleep would claim me fast and hard, but the fire was too warm, and the spring night too brisk to willingly breach that long gap of darkness between the flame and my tent.
"What happens to the ones who do make it through the wall?" Jurian asked,
the hard pains of his face cast in flickering relief by the fire. I ground the heel of my boot into the grass. "I don't know. They never came back once they went over. But while Amarantha ruled, creatures prowled these woods, so I don't think it ended well. I've never encountered a mention of them being at any court."
500 years ago? They'd have been flogged for that nonsense," Jurian said. "We were their slaves and whores and laborers for millennia. Men and women fought and died so we'd never have to serve them again. Yet there they are in those costumes, unaware of the danger, the history."
"Careful, or you might not sound like Highburn's faithful pet." A low, hateful laugh.
"That's what you think I am, isn't it? His dog."
"What's the end goal, then?"
"I have unfinished business."
"Miriam is dead." That madness danced again, replacing the rare lucidity.
"Everything I did during the war, it was for Miriam and me. For our people to survive and one day be free. And she left me for that pretty-faced prince the moment I put my people before her."
"I heard she left you because you became so focused on wringing information from Clithia that you lost sight of the real conflict."
"Miriam told me to go ahead and fuck her for information. Told me to seduce Clithia until she'd sold out all of Highburn and the Loyalists. She had no qualms with that, none."
"So all of this is to get Miriam back?" He stretched his long legs before him, crossing one ankle over the other.
"It's to draw her out of her little nest with that winged prick, and make her regret it."
"You get a second shot at life,
And that's what you wish to do? Revenge?
Jurian smiled slowly. Isn't that what you're doing?
Months of working with Rhys had me remembering to furrow my brow in confusion.
Against Rhys, I would one day like it.
That's what they all say, when they pretend he's a sadistic murderer.
You forget I knew him in the war. You forget he risked his legion to save Miriam from our enemy's fort. That's how Amarantha captured him, you know. Rhys knew it was a trap. For Prince Draken. So Rhys went against orders and marched in his whole legion to get Miriam out. For his friend. For my lover. And for that bastard Draken's sake. Rhys sacrificed his legion in the process. Got all of them captured and tortured afterward. Yet everyone insists Rhysand is soulless, wicked. But the male I knew was the most decent of them all. Better than that prick prince. You don't lose that quality, no matter the centuries. And Rhys was too smart to do anything but have the vilification of his character be a calculated move. And yet, here you are. His mate. The most powerful High Lord in the world lost his mate and has not come to claim her, even when she's defenseless in the woods.
Jurian chuckled.
Perhaps that's because Rhysand has not lost you at all, but rather unleashed you upon us.
I had never heard that story, but it seemed so like my mate that I knew the flames between us now smoldered in my eyes as I said,
"You love to hear yourself talk, don't you?"
"Hybern will kill all of you," was all Jurian replied.
Jurian wasn't wrong. Lucian woke me the next morning with a hand over my mouth, warning, gleaming in his russet eye. I smelled it a moment later. The coppery tang of blood. We shoved into our clothes and boots, and I did a quick inventory of the weapons we'd squeezed into the tent with us. I had 3 daggers. Lucian had 2, as well as an elegant short sword. Better than nothing, but not much. A glance from him communicated our plan well enough. Play casual until we assessed the situation. I had a heartbeat to realize that this was perhaps the first time he and I had worked in tandem. Hunting had never been a joint effort, and under the mountain had been one of us looking out for the other. Never a team, a unit. Lucian slid from the tent, limbs loose and ready to shift into a defensive position. He'd been trained, he once told me, at the Autumn Court and at this one. Like Rhys, he usually opted for words to win his battles. But I'd seen him and Tamlin in the practice ring. He knew how to handle a weapon, how to kill if need be. I pushed past him, devouring the details of my surroundings as if I were a starving man at a feast. The forest was the same. Jurian was crouched before the fire, stirring the embers back to alertness, his face a hard, brooding mask. But the sentries... They were pale as Lucian stalked to them. I followed their shifting attention to the trees behind Jurian. No sign of the royals. The blood. The coppery tang, yes, but laced with earth and marrow and... rot. Mortality. I stormed for the trees and dense brush.
"You're too late,"
Jurian said as I passed him, still poking the embers.
"They finished 2 hours ago."
Lucian was on my heels as I shoved into the brambles, thorns tearing at my hands. The Highburn royals hadn't bothered to clean up their mess. From what was left of the 3 bodies, their shredded pale robes like fallen ashes through the small clearing, Dagdon and Branna must have shut out their screams with some sort of shield. Lucian swore.
"They went through the wall last night to hunt them down."
Even with hours separating them, the royals were fey, swift, immortal. The 3 children of the Blessed would have tired after running, would have camped somewhere. Blood was already drying on the grass, on the trunks of the surrounding trees. Highburn's brand of torture wasn't very creative. Claire, the Golden Queen, and these three, a similar mutilating and torment. I unfastened my cloak and carefully laid it over the biggest remains of them I could find. The torso of the young man, clawed up and bloodless. His face was still etched in pain. Flame heated at my fingertips, begging me to burn them, to give them at least that sort of burial, but... Do you think it was for sport? Or to send us a message? Lucian laid his own cloak across the remains of the two young women. His face was as serious as I'd ever seen it. I think they aren't accustomed to being denied. I'd call this an immortal temper tantrum. I closed my eyes, trying to calm my roiling stomach. You aren't to blame, he added. They could have killed them out in the mortal lands, but they brought them here to make a statement about their power. He was right. The children of the Blessed would have been dead even if I hadn't interfered. They're threatened, I mused, and proud to a fault. I towed the blood-soaked grass. Do we bury them? Lucian considered. It sends a message that we're willing to clean up their messes. I surveyed the clearing again, considered everything at stake. Then we send another sort of message. Chapter 8. Tamlin paced in front of the hearth in his study, every turn as sharp as a blade. They are our allies, he growled at me, at Lucian, both of us seated in armchairs flanking the mantel. They're monsters, I countered. They butchered three innocents. And you should have left it alone for me to deal with. Tamlin heaved a jagged breath. Not retaliated like children. He threw a glare in Lucian's direction. I expected better from you. But not from me? I asked quietly. Tamlin's green eyes were like frozen jade. You have a personal connection to those people. He does not. That's the sort of thinking, I snapped, clutching the armrests, that has allowed for a wall to be the only solution between our two peoples, for the Fae to look at these sorts of murders and not care. I knew the guards outside could hear, knew anyone walking by could hear. The loss of any life on either side is a personal connection. Or is it only high Fae lives that matter to you? Tamlin stopped short and snarled at Lucian. Get out. I'll deal with you later. Don't you talk to him like that, I hissed, shooting to my feet. You have jeopardized this alliance with that stunt you two pulled. Good! They can burn in hell for all I care, I shouted. Lucian flinched. You sent the bogey after them, Tamlin roared. I didn't so much as blink, and I knew the sentries had heard indeed by the cough of one outside, a sound of muffled shock. And I made sure those sentries could still hear as I said, They terrorized those humans, made them suffer. I figured the bogey was one of the few creatures that could return the favor. Lucian had tracked it down, and we'd lured it, carefully, over hours, back to that camp. Right to where Dagdin and Branna had been gloating over their kill. They'd managed to get away, but only after what had sounded like a good bit of screaming and fighting. Their faces remained bloodless even hours later, their eyes still brimming with hate whenever they deigned to look at us. Lucian cleared his throat. Stood as well.
Tam, those humans were barely more than children. Feyre gave the royals an order to stand down. They ignored it. If we let Highburn walk all over us, we stand to lose more than their alliance. The bogey reminded them that we aren't without our claws, too.
Tamlin didn't take his eyes off me as he said to Lucien, "Get out." There was enough violence in the words that neither Lucien nor I objected this time as he slipped from the room and shut the double doors behind him. I speared my power into the hall, sensing him sitting on the foot of the stairs, listening, as the six sentries in the hall were listening. I said to Tamlin, my back ramrod straight, "You don't get to speak to me like that. You promised you wouldn't act this way. You have no idea what's at risk. Don't you talk down to me. Not after what I went through to get back here to you, to our people. You think any of us are happy to be working with Highburn? You think I don't see it in their faces? The question of whether I am worth the dishonor of it?" His breathing turned ragged again. Good. I wanted to urge him. Good. "You sold us out to get me back," I said, low and cold. "You whored us out to Highburn. Forgive me if I am now trying to regain some of what we lost." Claws slid free. A feral growl rippled out of him. "They hunted down and butchered those humans for sport," I went on. "You might be willing to get on your knees for Highburn, but I certainly am not." He exploded. Furniture splintered and went flying, windows cracked and shattered, and this time, I did not shield myself. The work table slammed into me, throwing me against the bookshelf, and every place where flesh and bone met wood barked and ached. My knees slammed into the carpeted floor, and Tamlin was instantly in front of me, hands shaking. The doors burst open. "What have you done?" Lucien breathed, and Tamlin's face was the picture of devastation as Lucien shoved him aside. He let Lucien shove him aside and help me stand. Something wet and warm slid down my cheek, blood from the scent of it. "Let's get you cleaned up," Lucien said, an arm around my shoulders as he eased me from the room. I barely heard him over the ringing in my ears, the slight spinning to the world. The sentries, Brawn and Hart, two of Tamlin's favorite Lord Warriors among them, were gaping, attention torn between the wrecked study and my face. With good reason. As Lucien led me past a gilded hall mirror, I beheld what had drawn such horror. My eyes were glassy, my face pallid, save for the scratch just beneath my cheekbone, perhaps 2 inches long and leaking blood. Little scratches peppered my neck, my hands, but I willed that cleansing, healing power, that of the High Lord of Dawn, to keep from seeking them out, from smoothing them away.
"Feyre," Tamlin breathed from behind us.
I halted, aware of every eye that watched. "I'm fine," I whispered. "I'm sorry." I wiped at the blood dribbling down my cheek. "I'm fine," I told him again. No one, not even Tamlin, looked convinced. And if I could have painted that moment, I would have named it "A Portrait in Snares and Baiting." Rhysand sent word down the bond the second I was soaking in the bathtub. "Are you hurt?" The question was faint, the bond quieter and tenser than it had been days ago. "Sore but fine, nothing I can't handle," though my injuries still lingered, and showed no signs of a speedy healing. Perhaps I'd been too good at keeping those healing powers at bay. The reply was a long time coming. Then it came all at once, as if he wanted to cram every word in before the difficulty of the distance silenced us. "I know better than to tell you to be careful or to come home, but I want you home, soon, and I want him dead for putting a hand on you."
Even with the entirety of the land between us, his rage rippled down the bond. I answered, my tone soothing, dry. Technically, his magic touched me, not his hand. The bath water was cold by the time his reply came through.
I'm glad you have a sense of humor about this. I certainly don't.
I sent back an image of me sticking out my tongue at him. My clothes were back on when his answer arrived. Like mine, it was wordless, a mere image. Like mine, Rhysand's tongue was out. But it was occupied with doing something else. I made a point to take a ride the next day, made sure it was when Braun and Hart were on duty, and asked them to escort me. They didn't say much, but I felt their assessing glances at my every wince as we rode the worn paths through the spring wood, felt them study the cut on my face, the bruises beneath my clothes that had me hissing every now and then. Still not fully healed, to my surprise, though I suppose it worked to my advantage. Tamlin had begged my forgiveness at dinner yesterday, and I'd given it to him. But Lucian hadn't spoken to him all evening. Jurian and the Highburn Royals had sulked at the delay after I'd quietly admitted my bruises made it too difficult to accompany them to the wall. Tamlin hadn't possessed the nerve to suggest they go without me, to rob me of that duty. Not when he saw the purplish markings, and knew that if they were on a human, I might have been dead.
And the royals, after Lucian and I had sent the bogey's invisible malice after them, had backed off.
For now. I kept my shields up, around myself and the others, the strain now a constant headache that had any extra sort of magic feeling feeble and thin. The reprieve on the border hadn't done much. No, it had made the strain worse after I'd sent my power through the wall. I'd invited Ianthe to the house, subtly requesting her comforting presence. She arrived knowing the full details of what had transpired in that study, letting it conveniently slip that Tamlin had confessed it to her, pleading for absolution from the mother and cauldron and whoever else. I prattled about my own forgiveness to her that evening, and made a show of taking her good counsel, telling the courtiers and others at our crowded table that night how lucky we were to have Tamlin and Ianthe guarding our lands. Honestly, I don't know how none of them connected it, how none of them saw my words as not a strange coincidence, but a dare, a threat. That last little nudge.
Especially when 7 Naga broke into the estate grounds, just past midnight.
They were dispatched before they reached the house, an attack halted by a cauldron-sent warning vision from none other than Ianthe herself. The chaos and screaming woke the estate. I remained in my room, guards beneath my windows and outside my door. Tamlin himself, blood-drenched and panting, came to inform me that the grounds were again secure.
That the Naga had been found with the keys to the gate, and the sentry who had lost them would be dealt with in the morning.
A final show of power from a tribe that had not gone gently after Amarantha's reign. All of us saved from further harm by Ianthe. We all gathered outside the barracks the next morning, Lucian's face pallid and drawn, purple smudges beneath his glazed eyes. He hadn't returned to his room last night. Beside me, the Highburn Royals and Jurian were silent and grim, as Tamlin paced before the sentry strung up between two posts.
"You were entrusted with guarding this estate and its people,"
Tamlin said to the shuddering male, already stripped down to his pants.
"You were found not only asleep at the gate last night, but it was your set of keys that originally went missing."
Tamlin snarled softly.
"Do you deny this?"
I never fall asleep. It's never happened until now. I must have just nodded off for a minute or two," the sentry stammered,
the ropes restraining him groaning as he strained against them.
You jeopardized the lives of everyone in this manner.
And it could not go unpunished. Not with the Highburn royals here, seeking any sign of weakness. Tamlin held out a hand. Braun, stone-faced, approached to give him a whip. All the sentries, his most trusted warriors, shifted about. Some outright glaring at Tamlin. Some trying not to watch what was about to unfold. I grabbed Lucian's hand. It wasn't entirely for show. Ianthe stepped forward, hands folded over her stomach.
20 lashes. And one more. For the cauldron's forgiveness.
The guards turned baleful eyes toward her now. Tamlin unfurled the whip into the dirt. I made my move, slid my power into the bound sentry's mind, and freed the memory I'd coiled up tightly in his head. Freed his tongue, too.
It was her, he panted, jerking his chin to Ianthe. She took the keys.
Tamlin blinked, and everyone in that courtyard looked right to Ianthe. Her face didn't so much as flinch at the accusation. The truth he'd flung her way. I'd been waiting to see how she'd counter my showing of power at the solstice, tracking her movements that entire day and night. Within moments of my leaving the party, she'd gone to the barracks, used some glimmer of power to lull him to sleep, and taken his keys.
Then planted her warnings about the Naga's impending attacks.
After, she gave the creatures the keys to the gates. So she could sound the alarm last night. So she could save us from a real threat. Clever idea. Had it not played right into everything I'd laid out. Ianthe said smoothly,
Why should I take the keys? I warned you of the attack.
You were at the barracks. I saw you that night, the sentry insisted.
Then turning pleading eyes to Tamlin, it wasn't fear of pain that propelled him, I realized. No, the lashings would have been deserved and earned and borne well. It was the fear of honor lost.
I would have thought one of your sentries, Tamlin, would have more dignity than to spread lies to spare himself from some fleeting pain.
Ianthe's face remained serene as always. Tamlin, to his credit, studied the sentry for a long moment. I stepped forward.
I will hear his story.
Some of the guards loosed sighs. Some looked at me with pity and affection. Ianthe lifted her chin.
With all due respect, m'lady, it is not your judgment to make.
And there it was. The attempt to knock me down a few pegs. Just because it would make her see red, I ignored her completely and said to the sentry,
I will hear your story.
I kept my focus on him, even as I counted my breaths, even as I prayed that Ianthe would take the bait.
You'll take the word of a sentry over that of a high priestess?
My disgust at her blurted words wasn't entirely feigned, even though hiding my faint smile was an effort. The guards shifted on their feet at the insult, the tone. Even if they had not already trusted their fellow sentry, from her words alone, they realized her guilt. I looked to Tamlin then, saw his eyes sharpen as well, with understanding. Too many protests from Ianthe.
Oh, he was well aware that Ianthe had perhaps planned that Naga attack to reclaim some shred of power and influence as a savior of these people. Tamlin's mouth tightened in disapproval.
I'd given them both a length of rope. I supposed now would be the moment to see whether they'd hang themselves with it. I dared one more step forward, upturning my palms to Tamlin. Perhaps it was a mistake. Don't take it from his hide or his honor. Let's hear him out. Tamlin's eyes softened a fraction. He remained silent, considering.
but behind me.
Branna snorted.
Pathetic,
she murmured, though everyone could hear it. Weak. Vulnerable. Ripe for conquest. I saw the words slam through Tamlin's face, as if they were shutting doors in their wake. There was no other interpretation. Not for Tamlin. But Ianthe assessed me. Standing before the crowd, the influence I'd made so very clear I was capable of stealing. If she admitted guilt, whatever she had left would come crumbling down. Tamlin opened his mouth, but Ianthe cut him off.
There are laws to be obeyed, she told me, gently enough that I wanted to drag my nails down her face. Traditions. He has broken our trust, has let our blood be spilled for his carelessness. Now he seeks to accuse a high priestess of his failings. It cannot go unpunished.
She nodded to Tamlin.
21 lashes, High Lord.
I glanced between them, my mouth going dry. Please, just listen to him. The guard hanging between the posts had such hope and gratitude in his eyes. In this, my revenge edged towards something oily, something foreign and queasy.
He would heal from the pain, but the blow to his honor. It'd take a little piece out of mine as well. Tamlin stared at me, then Ianthe, then glanced to the smirking Highburn royals, to Jurian, who crossed his arms, his face unreadable. And like I'd gambled, his need for control, for strength, won out. Ianthe was too important an ally to risk isolating. The word of a low sentry. No, it did not matter as much as hers. Tamlin turned to the sentry tied to the posts. Put the bit in, he quietly ordered Bronn. There was a heartbeat of hesitation from Bronn, as if the shock of Tamlin's order had rippled through him, through all the guards, siding with Ianthe, over them, his sentries. Who had gone over the wall again and again to try to break that curse for him, who had gladly done it, gladly died, hunted down as those wolves for him. And the wolf Eidfeld, Andres, he'd gone willingly too. Tamlin had sent them all over. And not all of them had come back. They had gone willingly, yet this. This was his thanks, his gratitude, his trust. But Bronn did as commanded, sliding the small piece of wood into the now trembling sentry's mouth. Judging by the barely concealed disdain in the guards' faces, at least they were aware of what had occurred, or what they believed had occurred. The High Priestess had orchestrated this entire attack to cast herself as a savior, offering up the reputation of one of their own as the asking price. They had no idea, none, that I'd goaded her into it, pushed and pushed her to reveal just what a snake she was, how little anyone without a title meant to her, how Tamlin listened to her without question, to a fault. It wasn't much of an act when I put a hand to my throat, backing up a step, then another, until Lucian's warmth was against me, and I leaned fully into him. The sentries were sizing up Ianthe, the royals. Tamlin had always been one of them, fought for them. Until now. Until Highburn. Until he put these foreign monsters before them. Until he put a scheming High Priestess before them. Tamlin's eyes were on us, on the hand Lucian put on my arm to steady me as he drew back the whip. The thunderous crack as it cleaved the air snapped through the barracks, the estate, through the very foundations of the court. Chapter 9 Ianthe wasn't done. I knew it, braced myself for it. She didn't flit back to her temple a few miles away. Rather, she remained at the house, seizing her chance to worm her way closer to Tamlin. She believed she'd gained a foothold, that her declaration of justice served at the bloody end of the whipping hadn't been anything but a final slap in the face to the guards who watched. And when that sentry had sagged from his bindings, when the others came to gently untie him, Ianthe merely ushered the Highburn party and Tamlin into the manor for lunch. But I'd remained at the barracks, tending to the groaning sentry, drawing away bloodied bowls of water while the healer quietly patched him up. Braun and Hart personally escorted me back to the estate hours later. I thanked each by name, then apologized that I hadn't been able to prevent it, Ianthe's scheming, or the unjust punishment of their friend. I meant every word. The crack of the whip was still echoing in my ears. Then they spoke the words I'd been waiting for. They were sorry they hadn't stopped any of it either. Not just today, but the bruises now fading at last, the other incidents. If I had asked them, they would have handed me their own knives to slit their throats. The next evening, I was hurrying back to my room to change for dinner when Ianthe made her next move. She was to come with us to the wall tomorrow morning. Her and Tamlin, too. If we were all to be a united front, she declared over dinner, then she wished to see the wall herself. The Highburn royals didn't care, but Jurian winked at me, as if he, too, saw the game in motion. I packed my own bags that night. Alice entered right before bed, a third pack in her hands. "Since it's a longer trip, I brought you supplies." Even with Tamlin joining us, it was too many people for him to winnow us directly. So we'd go, as we'd done before, in segments, a few miles at a time. Alice laid the pack she'd prepared beside my own, picked up the brush on the vanity, and beckoned me to sit on the cushioned bench before it. I obeyed. For a few minutes, she brushed my hair in silence. Then she said, "When you leave tomorrow, I leave too." I lifted my eyes to hers in the mirror. "My nephews are packed. The pony's ready to take us back to Summer Court territory at last. It's been too long since I saw my home," she said, though her eyes shone. "I know the feeling," was all I said. "I wish you well, lady," Alice said, setting down the brush and beginning to braid back my hair. "For the rest of your days, however long they may be, I wish you well." I let her finish the plait, then pivoted on the bench and gripped her thin fingers in mine. "Don't ever tell Tarquin you know me well," I said quietly. Her brows rose. "There is a blood ruby with my name on it," I clarified. Even her tree-bark skin seemed to blanch. She understood it well enough. I was a hunted enemy of the Summer Court. Only my death would be accepted as payment for my crimes. Alice squeezed my hand. "Blood rubies or no, you will always have one friend in the Summer Court." My throat bobbed. "And you will always have one in mine," I promised her. She knew which court I meant, and did not look afraid. The sentries did not glance at Tamlin, or so much as speak to him unless absolutely necessary. Braun, Hart, and three others were to join us. They'd spotted me checking on their friend before dawn, a courtesy I knew none of the others had extended. Winnowing felt like wading through mud. In fact, my powers had become more of a burden than a help. I had a throbbing headache by noon, and spent the last leg of the journey dizzy and disoriented as we winnowed again and again. We arrived and set up camp in near silence. I quietly, shyly asked to share a tent with Ianthe instead of Tamlin, appearing eager to mend the rift the whipping had torn between us. but I did it more to spare Lucian from her attention than to keep Tamlin at bay.
Dinner was made and eaten, bedrolls laid out, and Tamlin ordered Brawn and Hart on the first watch. Lying beside Ianthe without slitting her throat was an exercise in patience and control. But whenever the knife beneath my pillow seemed to whisper her name, I'd remind myself of my friends, the family that was alive, healing in the north. I repeated their names silently, over and over into the darkness. Rhysand, Mor, Cassian, Amryn, Azriel, Elaine, Nesta. I thought of how I had last seen them, so bloodied and hurting. Thought of Cassian's screams as his wings were shredded. Of Azriel's threat to the king as he advanced on Mor. Nesta, fighting every step toward the cauldron. My goal was bigger than revenge. My purpose greater than personal retribution. Dawn broke, and I found my palm curled around the hilt of my knife anyway. I drew it out as I sat up, staring down at the sleeping priestess. The smooth column of her neck seemed to glow in the early morning sun, leaking in through the tent flaps. I weighed the knife in my hand. I wasn't sure I'd been born with the ability to forgive. Not for terrors inflicted on those I loved. For myself, I didn't care. Not nearly as much. But there was some fundamental pillar of steel in me that could not bend or break in this. Could not stomach the idea of letting these people get away with what they'd done. Ianthe's eyes opened. The teal as limpid as her discarded circlet. They went right to the knife in my hand, then to my face. "You can't be too careful while sharing a camp with enemies," I said. I could have sworn something like fear shone in her eyes. "Highburn is not our enemy," she said, a bit breathlessly. From her paleness as I left the tent, I knew my answering smile had done its job well. Lucian and Tamlin showed the twins where the crack in the wall lay. And as they had the first two times, they spent hours surveying it, the surrounding land. I kept close this time, watching them. My presence now deemed relatively unthreatening, if not a nuisance. We'd played our little power games, established I could bite if I wished, but we'd tolerate each other.
"Here,"
Branna murmured to Dagdon, jerking her chin to the invisible divider. The only markings were the different trees. On our side, they were bright, fresh, green of spring. On the other, they were dark, broad, curling slightly with heat. The height of summer.
"The first one was better,"
Dagdon countered. I sat atop a small boulder, peeling an apple with a paring knife.
"Closer to the western coast, too,"
he added to his twin.
"This is closer to the continent. To the strait."
I sliced deep into the flesh of the apple, carving out a hunk of white meat for myself.
"Yes, but we'd have more access to the High Lord's supplies."
Said High Lord was currently off with Jurian, hunting for food more filling than the sandwiches we'd packed. Ianthe had gone to a nearby spring to pray, and I had no idea whatsoever where Lucian or the sentries were.
"Good."
Easier for me as I shoved the apple slice into my mouth and said around it,
"I say go for this one."
They twisted toward me, Branna sneering and Dagdon's brows high.
"What do you know of any of it?" Branna demanded.
I shrugged, cutting another piece of apple.
"You two talk louder than you realize."
Shared accusatory glares between them. Proud, arrogant, cruel. I'd been taking their measure this fortnight.
"Unless you want to risk the other courts having time to rally and intercepting you before you can cross to the strait, I'd pick this one."
Branna rolled her eyes.
I went on, rambling and bored.
But what do I know? You two have squatted on a little island for 500 years. Clearly you know more about Prithian and moving armies than me.
Brenna hissed.
This is not about armies, so I will trust you to keep that mouth shut until we have use for you.
I snorted.
You mean to tell me all of this nonsense hasn't been to find a place to break through the wall and use the cauldron to also transport the mass of your armies here?
She laughed, low and cold.
The cauldron is not for transporting grunt armies. It is for remaking worlds. It's for bringing down this hideous wall and reclaiming what we were.
I merely crossed my legs.
I'd think that with an army of 10,000, you wouldn't need any magical objects to do your dirty work.
Our army is 10 times that, girl,
Brenna sneered.
And twice that number if you count our allies in Valahan, Montessere, and Rask.
200,000. Mother save us.
You've certainly been busy all these years.
I surveyed them, utterly nonplussed.
Why not strike when Amarantha had the island?
The king had not yet found the cauldron, despite years of searching. It served his purposes to let her be an experiment for how we might break these people, and served as good motivation for our allies on the continent to join us, knowing what would await them.
I finished off my apple and chucked the core into the woods. They watched it fly like two hounds tracking a pheasant.
So, they're all going to converge here? I'm supposed to play hostess to so many soldiers?
Our own force will take care of Prithian before uniting with the others. Our commanders are preparing for it as we speak.
You must think you stand a shot at losing if you're bothering to use the cauldron to help you win.
The cauldron is victory. It will wipe this world clean again.
I lifted my eyes in irreverent cynicism.
And you need this exact spot to unleash it?
This exact spot, Dagdon said, a hand on the hilt of his sword, exists because a person or object of mighty power passed through it.
The cauldron will study the work they've already done, and magnify it until the wall collapses entirely. It is a careful, complex process, and one I doubt your mortal mind can grasp.
Probably, though this mortal mind did manage to solve Amarantha's riddle, and destroy her.
Brenna merely turned back to the wall.
Why do you think Highburn let her live for so long in these lands? Better to have someone else to do his dirty work.
I had what I needed. Tamlin and Jurian were still off hunting. The royals were preoccupied, and I'd sent the sentries to get me more water, claiming that some of my bruises still ached a bit, and I wanted to make a poultice for them. They'd looked positively murderous at that. Not at me, but at who had given me those bruises, who had picked Ianthe over them, and Highburn over their honor and people. I brought 3 packs, but I'd only need one. The one I'd carefully repacked with Alice's new supplies, now tucked beside everything I'd anticipated needing to get clear of them and go. The one I'd brought with me on every trip out to the wall just in case. And now. I had numbers. I had a purpose. I had a specific location. And the names of foreign territories. But more than that, I had a people who had lost their faith in their high priestess. I had sentries who were beginning to rebel against their high lord. And as a result of those things, I had Highburn royals doubting the strength of their allies here. I'd primed this court to fall, not from outside forces, but its own internal warring. And I had to be clear of it before it happened, before the last sliver of my plan fell into place. The party would return without me, and to maintain that illusion of strength, Tamlin and Ianthe would lie about it, where I'd gone. And perhaps a day or two after that, one of these sentries would reveal the news, a carefully sprung trap that I'd coiled into his mind like one of my snares. I'd fled for my life, after being nearly killed by the Highburn prince and princess. I'd planted images in his head of my brutalized body, the markings consistent with what Dagdan and Branna had already revealed to be their style. He'd describe them in detail. Describe how he helped me get away before it was too late. How I ran for my life when Tamlin and Ianthe refused to intervene, to risk their alliance with Highburn. And when the sentry revealed the truth, no longer able to stomach keeping quiet when he saw how my sorry fate was concealed by Tamlin and Ianthe, just as Tamlin had sided with Ianthe the day he'd flogged that sentry. When he described what Highburn had done to me, their Cursebreaker, their newly anointed Cauldron Blessed, before I'd fled for my life? There would be no further alliance, for there would be no sentry or denizen of this court who would stand with Tamlin or Ianthe after this. After me. I ducked into my tent to grab my pack, my steps light and swift. Listening, barely breathing, I scanned the camp, the woods. A few seconds extra had me snatching Tamlin's bandolier of knives from where he'd left them inside his tent. They'd get in the way while using a bow and arrow, he'd explained that morning. Their weight was considerable as I slung it across my chest. Illyrian fighting knives. Home. I was going home. I didn't bother to look back at the camp as I slipped into the northern tree line. If I winnowed without stopping between leaps, I'd be at the foothills in an hour, and would vanish through one of the caves not long after that. I made it about 100 yards into the cover of the trees before I halted. I heard Lucian first.
Back off.
A low female laugh. Everything in me went still and cold at that sound. I'd heard it once before, in Rhysand's memory. Keep going. They were distracted, horrible as it was. Keep going, keep going, keep going.
I thought you'd seek me out after the ride,
Ianthe purred. They couldn't be more than 30 feet through the trees, far enough away not to hear my presence, if I was quiet enough.
I was obligated to perform the rite, Lucian snapped. That night wasn't the product of desire, believe me.
We had fun, you and I.
I'm a mated male now.
Every second was the ringing of my death knell. I'd primed everything to fall. I'd long since stopped feeling any sort of guilt or doubt about my plan, not with Alice now safely away. And yet...
You don't act that way with Feyre.
A silk-wrapped threat.
You're mistaken.
Am I?
Twigs and leaves crunched, as if she was circling him.
You put your hands all over her.
I had done my job too well. Provoked her jealousy too much with every instance I'd found ways to get him to touch me in her presence. In Tamlin's presence.
Do not touch me,
he growled. And then I was moving. I masked the sound of my footfalls, silent as a panther as I stalked to the little clearing where they stood, where Lucian stood, back against a tree, twin bands of blue stone shackled around his wrists. I'd seen them before. On Rhys, to immobilize his power. Stone hewn from Highburn's rotted land, capable of nullifying magic. And in this case, holding Lucian against that tree as Ianthe surveyed him like a snake before a meal. She slid a hand over the broad panes of his chest, his stomach. And Lucian's eyes shot to me as I stepped between the trees, fear and humiliation reddening his golden skin. That's enough, I said.
Ianthe whipped her head to me. Her smile was innocent, simpering. But I saw her note to the pack.